It was full dark when Smoke saw the light shining from the windows of the cabin. Smoke rubbed Drifter down, gave him an extra ration of corn, and turned him loose to roll.
Hey, Smoke.
Pearly, what happened?
He'll tell you over dinner. Come in, wash up, and I'll fix you a plate.
Over a heaping plate of beef and potatoes and gravy and beans flavored with honey, with bear sign for dessert, of course, Pearly told his story while Smoke ate.
If there was any law worth a damn in this country, I could have Tilden arrested.
I don't even know where the county lines are.
Pearly looked at that plate of donuts. He would have liked another one, but he'd already eaten 20 that day, and he was ashamed to ask for it. With a smile, Sally pushed the plate of bear sign toward him.
Well, maybe just one more.
What country does our land lie in, Smoke?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It might be split in half, and that's something to think about, but I don't know. You can bet that when it comes to little farmers and little ranchers up against kingpins like Tilden, the law is going to side with the big boys. Might be wiser just to keep the law out of this altogether.
I thought you folks had bought most of your land and filed on the rest.
We have, and it's been checked and it's all legal. But they surveyed again a couple of years ago and drew up new lines. I never heard any more about it.
Mr. Smoke?
Yeah, Bob.
Who is Charlie Starr?
He's a gunfighter, Bob. He's been a lot of things. But mostly a good man. Strange one, though. I met him while I was riding with an old mountain man called Preacher. Why do you ask?
Well, I heard them Jones boys was talking last week when we was all gathered over at the Matlocks for Sunday services. That fellow who sometimes works for Mr. Matlock said Charlie Starr's been camped out around this country for a month or so.
I can't believe Charlie is in here to hire his guns out to Tilden. He never has hired his guns out against a little man. He's done a lot of things, but he kind of backed into his rep as a gunslick. Maybe that fellow was mistaken.
Maybe, Mr. Smoke.
Charlie Starr shifted his blankets away from his fire and settled in for the night. His horse was nearby, cropping grass. Since that puncher had come up on him, he'd moved his location out of, he thought, the TF range. High up in the mountains, where snow was still capping the crests, above some place called the Sugar Loaf.
Sugar Loaf. Nice sounding name.
Lewis Longmont stood outside his gaming tent. He had been playing stud and winning as usual, but his thoughts hadn't been on the game, so he had gone outside for some fresh air. The town was growing by hundreds each day. Most of the men were miners or would-be miners, but there was a lot of trash mixed in as well. Lewis figured that with this many people working the area, the town might last, 6 months, maybe less. There was a strong urge within the man to just fold his tent and pull out. He felt in his bones that there'd be a bloodbath before everything was said and done. But Lewis couldn't do that. He'd given his word to Preacher he'd look in on Smoke from time to time. Not that Smoke needed any looking after, but a man's word was his bond, so Lewis would see it through. He tossed his cigar into the street and walked back into his gaming tent. Meanwhile, Tilden Franklin sat alone in his huge house, his thoughts just as savage as much of the land that lay around him. His thoughts would have made a grizzly flinch, in fact. Tilden had never seen a woman that he desired more than Sally Jensen. Educated, aloof, beautiful. Tilden wondered how she'd look with her dress on the floor.
Oh, damnation.
He shook that thought from him. Then, with a faint smile curving his lips, he thought about the Nestor Colby. More specifically, he thought about Colby's daughter, Velvet. He knew how to get rid of that Nestor. Let his boys have some fun in the process. Billy lay on the hay in the loft in his long johns, his new clothing carefully folded and stored on a little ledge.
I wonder how it would be to have a pot like Smoke. Probably real nice.
There was a streak of gentleness in the gunfighter that few adults could see, but a kid could see it right off. Smoke for a father. Now that was something to dream about.
One thing for sure, nobody would mess with me, ever.
Ed Jackson lay by his wife's side in their wagon and mentally counted all the money he was going to make. He'd hired some rough-looking men that day, promising them a grubstake if they'd build his store for him. Ed Jackson dreamed of great wealth. Ed Jackson dreamed of becoming a very important man, maybe even someone like Tilden Franklin. Now there was a really important man. Meanwhile, Paul Jackson lay in his blankets under another wagon. He was restless. Sleep was elusive. He kept thinking about the way Bountiful had looked at him. Something was building between them. He just knew it. And Paul also knew that he wasn't going to hang around here with his stupid, greedy brother any longer than necessary.
If I could find gold, that would really make Bountiful sit up and take notice of me. Or lay down and take notice of me.
The next morning, leaving Pearly with Sally, Smoke escorted Bob back to his home. For the first time since arriving in the area, Smoke saw both Wilbur Mason and Colby armed with shotguns and rifles. Nolan was with them, making sure he had enough supplies. Dismounting, Smoke ground rain drifter and face the farmer ranchers.
Seen any of the others?
Ray and Betty sent word that they're with us all the way.
How about Peyton?
Both men shrugged.
I think he'll stand. Way he talked to me the other day, he'll stick. How's your food supply?
Plenty. The old woman canned enough last summer to last us for a good long time. Potato bin's half full. What's your plan, Smoke?
I'm staying close to home, shifting my cattle to a different graze. But if I need something in the way of supplies, nothing or nobody will keep me out of Fontana.
When you decide to go in, I'll take my wagon and go in with you. The two of us can get supplies for everybody.
Sounds good. We don't want to leave the whole area without men, folks. I'm going to talk with the others today, get a better idea of where they stand. I'll see you both later on.
Velvet came out of the house and walked to the well. Smoke's eyes followed her. She was a young girl, but she was built like a grown woman. And that worried Smoke. Tilden was ruthless. He might do anything. And some of the gun slicks riding for the TF brand were nothing more than pure white trash. They'd do anything Tilden ordered. Colby followed Smoke's eyes.
I still think you're wrong about her safety, Smoke. She's just a child.
Tilden Franklin is a sorry son of a bitch. Don't put anything past him.
Mr. Jansen?
Yeah, Nolan?
I've heard some rumors hereabouts, and I wanted to ask you.
Yes?
What's this talk about Charlie Starr?
Charlie Starr. So far as I know, it's just that. Talk. I think if he's in this area, he's here to kill Tilden Franklin. Lots of bad blood between those two. Goes back years, so the story goes. I'm going to try to pin the rumor down, but when I do, I'll get back with you. Get back to your land, Nolan, and keep an eye on your women folk. I have no way of knowing exactly what Tilden has in mind, but whatever it is bad news for us, that's for sure.
I'm not going to put up with these miners tearing up my land, Smoke. If I have to shoot two or three of them, I will.
Check your land title, Nolan. You might not have mineral rights. Ever think about that?
Mineral? Oh, hell. Could somebody buy those rights without my permission?
I think so. The law is still kind of raw out here, you know that. I checked on my title last night. I own the mineral rights to my land.
I just didn't think about it. I'll do that. See you, Smoke.
See you, boys.
Smoke rode hard that day, stopping in to see all the small outfits he thought might throw in with him and the others. And he had been correct in his thinking. Steve and Mike and Nolan and Ray had all agreed to toss in, forming an alliance among all the small spreads. If one got hit, the others would respond. Their lives and money were sunk deep into this land, and with many, some of their blood as well. They were not going to run. Smoke spent a week staying close to home. He received no news about what might be happening in Fontana. Then, on a fine, clear, late spring day, Smoke decided to ride his valley. You found several miners' camps high up.
This is my land. Clear out now.
Hey, you told us to get off Colby land or whatever, and now you say this is yours? How do we know you just don't want the gold here for yourself?
You don't. Now this is my land. Get out.
Oh, yeah? And if we don't?
I'll kill you.
You know, you talk big, mister, but I'm wondering if you got the sand to back up your words.
My name is Smoke Jensen.
Oh, shit. Mr. Jensen. We'll clear out right quick. Sorry for your trouble, Mr. Jensen, sir.
You got an hour.
Yeah!
Within 20 minutes, they were gone. As the day continued on, Smoke decided to stop in a stand of timber and eat the lunch that Sally had prepared for him.
Damn, Drifter. Is that wood smoke?
Smoke turned toward the smell and followed the invisible trail. It took him the better part of an hour to find the well-concealed camp, and when he found it, he knew he had come face to face with one of the most feared men in all the West.
Charlie Starr.
Smoke wisely kept his distance.
Hello, the camp. Mind some company?
Is this your land?
Sure is.
Come on, then. Light and set. You're welcome to share what I got.
Thanks. My wife fixed me a bait of food.
Charlie Starr looked hard at Smoke.
Ain't I seen you, Force?
Yeah, long time ago up in Wyoming. I was with a mountain man called Preacher.
Well, I'd just be damned if that ain't the truth. You've grown a mite, boy.
Charlie's eyes flicked to Smoke's guns.
No notches, that's good. Only a tin horn cuts his kills. Half of them are lies.
I told that to a boy just the other day. I don't think he believed me.
Yeah, he might not live to be a man, thinking like that. Say now, is that some bear sign I spot in your sack?
Sure is. Here you go.
Much obliged, Smoke. They'll make for a fine dessert. Have some coffee.
Smoke filled his battered tin cup and settled back to enjoy his lunch among the mountain flowers and trees and cool but pleasant breezes.
You wondering why I'm squatted on your range?
Stay as long as you're friendly, Charlie.
And you'd brace me too, wouldn't you, young man?
Younger eyes met older eyes. Both sets were flint hard and knowing.
I'd try you, Charlie.
I killed my first man before you was even a glint in your daddy's eyes, Smoke. Way before. How old do you think I am?
You ain't no young rooster.
You sure right about that. I'm 58 years old. I killed my first man when I was 14, I think it was. That'd be, back in 36, I reckon.
I was 14 when I killed an Indian. I think we were in Kansas.
You don't say. I'd be damned. Some folks would say that an Injun don't count, but I ain't one of them folks. Injuns is just like us, but different.
You don't look your age, Charlie.
Thank you. But on cold mornings, I sure feel it. Seen me a bunch of boomers heading this way. They made it to No Name yet?
No Name is now Fontana. And yeah, the boomers made it and are still coming in.
Fontana. Right, pretty name, Fontana. Now, what do you think about that?
Smoke said nothing. Preacher had told him the story about Charlie's girl, Rosa Fontana, and about Tilden Franklin killing the girl and dragging Charlie. The men ate quietly for a time, silently enjoying each other's company. While they ate, they eyeballed each other when one thought the other wasn't looking. Smoke took in Charlie's lean frame. The man's waist was so thin he looked like he'd have to eat a dozen bear signs just to hold his britches up. Like most cowboys, his main strength lay in his shoulders and arms. The man's wrists were thick, the hands big and scarred and calloused. His face was tanned and rugged looking. Charlie Starr looked like a man who'd be hard to handle in any kind of fight. Then Smoke had an idea that if Charlie was agreeable, would send Tilden Franklin right through the roof of his mansion in fits of rage.
You always sit around grinning, boy.
No, but I just had me an idea.
Must have been a good one.
You looking for work, Charlie?
Not so she'd notice, I ain't.
Have a bear sign.
Mmm, Oh, damn, that's mighty fine.
My wife is one of the best cooks in the state.
Keep talking.
Wouldn't be a whole lot to do. I got one hand named Pearly.
Right good with a gun, is he?
He'll do to ride the river with. Some of Tilden's boys hung a rope on him last week and dragged him a piece. Then they shot him in the head. Pearly managed to live and get lead in two of them. He's back working a full day now.
Sounds like he'll do, all right. What is he, half gator?
He's tough. I'll pay you 30 and found.
Don't need no job. But, your wife make these bear sign now and then, does she?
Once a week.
I come and go as I please, as long as my work's caught up.
Sure, but I do have to warn you. There'll probably be some shooting involved, and, well, with you getting along in years and all, I wouldn't blame you if you turned it down.
Charlie fixed Smoke with a look that would have withered a cactus, needles and all.
Boy, are you out of your goddamn mind or just born slow?
Well, no, Charlie, but they're going to be Bronx to bust. And with your age and all, I was just...
God damn it, boy! I ain't ready for no old folks home just yet.
Whoa now. Don't get worked up, Charlie. You're liable to have a heart attack, and I don't know nothing about treating heart attacks.
Why, you... Sure tell Preacher had a hand in your upbringing, Smoke.
Charlie stuck a hard, rough hand across the hat-sized fire.
You got a man that'll ride the river with you, Smoke Jensen.
Smoke took that hand, and a new friendship was born. On the slow ride back to the ranch, Smoke discovered that Charlie and Preacher shared one common bond. They both liked a bitch. And like Preacher's had been, Charlie's complaints were numerous and mostly made up.
I stayed in the hospital a week one time. Them doctors found more wrong with me than a human body ought to ever have to suffer. I swear if I'd stayed in there another week, I'd have probably died. They told me that no human being could be shot 22 times and still live. I told them I wasn't shot no 22 times. It was 25 times. But three of them holes was in a place they wasn't about to look at. Boy, was I wrong. Nurse come in that first day. That was the homeliest looking female I ever did see. Looked like death riding a gorilla. Told me to hike up that gown they had me in. I told her that her and no two others like her was big enough to make me do that. I was wrong again. I want to warn you now, Smoke. Don't ever get around me with no rubber tubing. Don't do it. I am liable to go plumb berserk. Them hospitals, boy, they got a thing about flushing out a man's system. Stay away from hospitals, boy. They'll kill you.
Pearly was outside when they got to the ranch. He was clearly in awe. Not only was he working for Smoke Jensen, but now Smoke had done gone and hired Charlie Starr.
Charlie, this is Pearly.
Shut your mouth, boy, before you swallow a bug.
Pearly closed his mouth. Charlie was visibly taken aback when Sally came out of the cabin to meet him dressed in men's jeans with a pistol belted around her tiny waist. He's afraid she'd be lighting up a cigar next.
Sally, this here's Charlie Starr. He'll be staying with us for a little while.
Hello, Mr. Starr. I've got dinner cooking inside. Steak, beans, potatoes, some bread, with some fresh apple pie for dessert.
Well, now, it's Charlie, ma'am. Just Charlie.
Smoke and Sally soon noted that, for such a spare fella, Charlie could sure as hell eat.
Well, bring me up to date, Smoke.
People heard about the gold around here. And Tilden's got plans for the land. He's well on his way to running the whole town, from the law to the money. Some of us nesters don't really feel like giving up their land, so he's fixing on taking it. Already burned down one home. He's also made his desire for Sally known.
Well, it's his way, all right. And I know. He's done it before. He did it to my wife. The way I hear it, Tilden fancied that she was coming up on him. But that was her job, hostess at a saloon. Rosa had part of the action, owned about 25% of it. When I come to be in the hospital after Tilden's boys drug me, Lewis told me what really happened.
Lewis?
Lewis Longmont. It was one of his places. And you know Lewis don't tolerate no pleasure ladies working for him. That's more Big Mama O'Neill style. Lewis was considerably younger then, and, you know, so was I. Lewis said one of his bouncers saw it all. Well, most of it. Tilden was so drunk, and when Rosa tried to break loose from him, he started slapping her around. Bad. The bouncers came running, but Tilden's hands held him at bay whilst he took Rosa in the back room and had his way with her. Then he killed her. Broke her neck with his bare hands. You see, one of them doctors in that damnable hospital told me, once I got to trust the fella, that Tilden ain't quite right in the head. He's got the ability to twist things all around and make the bad look good and so forth. He shapes things the way he wants them to be in his mind. I just remember the exact word the doc used. That gorilla-faced nurse come by about that time with some rubber tubing in her hands, and things kind of went hazy on me.
What nurse?
I'll tell you later.
Me and Rosa was gonna get married in the spring. I was unconscious for several days. Didn't even get to go to her burying. Of course, by the time I got on my feet, Tilden and his bunch was long gone. I lost track of them for a time. But by then, the fires inside me had burned low. I still hated the man, but I had to make a living and didn't have no idea where he might be. I've been knowing he was in this area for some years. I've drifted in and out a half dozen times, staying low, watching that lowlife build his little kingdom. Then I had me an idea. I'd wait until he got real big, real powerful, real sure of himself. And then I'd kill him. Slow. Best grub I've had in many moon, ma'am. I thank you. Reckon I'll turn in now. Tomorrow I want to roam the range for a couple of days, learn all the twists and turns and ways in and out. I seen me a cook stove in the bunkhouse. I'll fix me a poke before I pull out in the morning. Night, folks.
I think Tilden Franklin's string has just about run out.
That hombre who just walked out the door means every word he said. Story goes that Charlie's folks were killed by Indians when he was just a little boy. He was raised by the Cheyenne. If Charlie says he's going to kill Tilden Franklin slow, that's exactly what he means.
For 2 days, Charlie prowled the Sugarloaf, getting his bearings and inspecting the cattle and horses that Smoke and Sally were raising. After learning about the Sugarloaf, he returned to the ranch house.
Charlie, you want it known you're working for me?
It don't make no difference to me, Smoke. My being here ain't gonna make Tilden backpedal none. Man sets out to be king, only thing that's gonna stop him is dying.
That's true. I'll be gone for several days, Charlie. You and Pearlie stay close to the house, all right?
Yep, will do.
Smoke pulled out early the next morning, riding Drifter. It was not like Tilden to wait once his intentions became known. Smoke wanted to find out what the kingpin had up his sleeve. As he rode, the sounds of mining reached his ears. The miners were in full swing, and they were paying no attention to the no trespassing signs the farmer ranchers had posted around their property. Bad trouble was building. The smell of it was in the air. Smoke figured he'd better check in with Lawyer Brooke as soon as he hit town.
Smoke, I'm sorry. There is nothing your friends can do, not legally.
It's their land.
But they don't hold the mineral rights to it. The holder of those rights has given the miners permission to mine. The miners get 50%. The holder of the rights gets 50%.
Smoke leaned back in his chair and built one of his rare cigarettes from the cloth pouch he carried in his vest pocket.
Let me guess. Tilden Franklin bought all the mineral rights.
Well, if you don't hear it from me, you'll hear it from somebody else. Yes, that is correct.
It's legal stealing, Hunt.
I wouldn't phrase it quite like that.
I just did.
The long building containing the offices of the lawyer, the doctor, and the newspaper had been put up in a hurry, but it was well built nonetheless. Across the street, the big store of Ed Jackson's was in business and doing quite well. Smoke eyeballed the many heavily loaded wagons lined up behind it, waiting to be unloaded. And surprisingly enough, Ralph Morrow's church was up, nearly completed. He walked towards it and located the minister.
You do all this yourself, Ralph?
Oh, no. Mr. Franklin donated the money for the church and paid the workmen to build it. He's really a very fine man, Smoke. I think you're wrong about him.
Well, I'm happy about your church, Ralph. I wish you a great deal of success.
Thank you, Smoke.
Smoke walked over to Lewis's place. The gambler was sitting at a table having breakfast. He waved Smoke over.
Saw you right in just as I was getting up. Care for late breakfast?
Sounds good.
Hey, get my friend here the house special. You're gonna like it, Smoke.
I'll trust you.
Have you spoken to the minister yet?
Yep. Sounds like he's gonna have his church pretty soon.
Nice move on Franklin's part, don't you think?
Very Christian of the man.
Slick on his part about the mineral rights.
I'll tell you the same thing I told Lawyer Brooke. It's nothing but legal stealing.
Oh, I agree with you, Smoke. But it is legal. Were I you, I'd advise the others to walk lightly and don't start any shooting.
It's their land, Lewis. They have a right to protect their herds.
Yes, they do.
Longmont took a sip of coffee out of one of the fanciest cups Smoke had ever seen. One thing about Lewis Longmont, when he traveled, he went first class all the way, carrying a cook, a valet, and a huge bodyguard with him at all times. The bodyguard usually acted as a bouncer in Lewis's place and was rarely seen, except when there was trouble. And then he was seen by the troublemaker only very briefly, seconds before the troublemaker died in Mike's bare hands, providing Lewis didn't shoot the troublemaker outright first. Lewis buttered a piece of toasted bread and then spread preserves on top of it. The preserves, Smoke was sure, were imported.
Smoke, you know, or I hope you do, that I'll back you to the hilt, and whatever you do, regardless of whether I think you're right or wrong. Preacher saved my life a number of times, and besides that, you are a very good young man. But whether our newly elected laws were the tinker's dam or not, in this mineral rights matter, Tilden Franklin is legal. And the law is on his side. Smoke, the land can be repaired. Another hole in the ground is not worth a shooting or a hanging. But your herds? Well, that is quite another matter. There is no law out here that says a man can't hang or shoot or a rustler or a horse thief, if you get my drift.
Smoke got it, and he would pass the word to the other small farmer ranchers. Then they would ride out and advise the miners that there'd be no trouble, providing the herds of cattle and horses were left alone. But trample over someone's garden, stampede one herd, cut out one beaver, steal one horse, and someone was going to die. And then, if any or all those things happened, they'd have to have the raw nerve to carry the threat through.
Ah, here comes your breakfast.
Well, damn if I know what it is.
It isn't done yet. Chef, the pièce de résistance.
The pièce de résistance.
Whoa!
Sit down, Smoke. Enjoy your breakfast.
Hell, I can't eat fire.
Look, see? The flames are gone. Those are crêpes Suzette, my young friend. The liquor is poured on top to caramelize the sugar. The dish is an au jambon.
Do tell.
An omelet with bits of ham. Now eat and enjoy.
Pretty good omelet. Ooh. Crap Susie's are a little too sweet, but good.
I'm glad to hear that, Smoke.
Either way, I think we're all looking at a lot of trouble just up the road.
I share your feelings, Smoke, but why not postpone it as long as possible? You know this strike is not going to last. In 6 months, it will have seen its heyday.
I can't figure you, Lewis.
How's that, Smoke?
Well, I've never known you to...
To what? To back off from trouble, Smoke?
I apologize for thinking it, Lewis.
Ah, no need for any of that. Not between friends. But you're right, Smoke. I am trying to avoid trouble. Not for my sake, but for yours.
My sake?
Listen to me, my young friend. How many guns do you have? 12? Maybe 15 at the most? Tilden has 75 hard cases right now. He can pull in 200 more anytime he wishes. And will. Talk is that Luis Chamba's on his way here. And where Luis goes, Sanderson and King go with him. Think about it.
Smoke thought about it, and the more he thought about it, the madder he got.
No, Lewis. No. Don't you see what Tilden's trying to pull?
Of course I do, boy. But give it time. In 6 months, this area of the country will be right back where it was a month ago. Farm and ranch country. This town will dry up, with only a few of the businesses remaining. I'm betting Tilden won't want to be king of nothing.
He won't be king of nothing, Lewis. Because if we don't fight, he'll kill us all one by one. He'll make some grand gesture of buying out the widows or the kids through some goddamn lawyer. And then he'll own this entire section of the state of Colorado. Everything.
Maybe you're right, Smoke. Maybe you're right. Well, if that's the case, then you've got to start hiring guns of your own. You and your wife have the means to do so. And if you don't, let me advance you the money.
Suddenly, Smoke thought of something. And the more he thought about it, the better he liked it.
Why are you smiling, Smoke?
Lewis, you're one of the best gamblers around, aren't you?
Some say I'm one of the best in the world, Smoke. I should think my numerous bank accounts would back up that claim. But what do you ask?
Suppose you suddenly learned you were dying. Or suppose, well, call it fate. Started dealing you bad hands and you ended up broke and old. Anything along that line. And then someone offered you the chance to once more live in glory. Your kind of glory. Would you take it, Lewis? Or would you think the offer to be cruel?
What an interesting thought. Say now. Cruel? Oh, no, not at all. I jump at the opportunity. But what are you thinking of, Smoke? I'm not following this line of questioning at all.
You will, Lewis.
Smoke stood up and smiled mysteriously.
You will. And I think you'll find it to your liking. I really believe you will. So, Charlie, what do you think? It's not cruel, is it?
Smoke, that's the best idea I've heard in a long, long time. Cruel? No, sir, it ain't cruel. What you're talking about is what they do best. You give me the wherewithal and I'll have an even dozen here in a week. As soon as I can get to a telegraph and get hold of them and get some money to them.
Name them, Charlie.
Oh, well, there's Luke Nations, Pistol LaRue, Bill Foley, Dan Greentree, Leo Wood, Gary Webb, Sunset Hatfield, Crooked John Simmons, Bull Flagler, Toot Tuner, Sutler Cordova, Red Shingletown. Oh, give me time and I'll name some more.
Wait, but all them old boys is dead.
No, they ain't neither, Pearly. They just retired is all.
Well, then they must be 100 years old.
No, you just a kid is all. They all in their 60s.
I sure don't want to be responsible for any of them going to their deaths.
Pearly, it's the way they'd want it. If they all died, they'd go out thanking Smoke for the opportunity to show the world they still had it in them. Let them go out in a blaze of glory, Smoke.
Smoke thought about it. That was sure as hell the way Preacher would have wanted to go. And those old mountain men 3 years back, that's how they had wanted it.
All right, Charlie. We'll give you the money and you can pull out at first light. Me and Pearly will start adding on to the bunkhouse. How many do you think will be here?
When the word gets out, I'd look for about 25 or so. You're going to have to hire you a cook to help Miss Sally. Or you'll work her to a frazzle, Smoke.
All right. Do you know any old camp cook?
Sure do. Dad Weaver. He can cook, and he can still pull a trigger, too. One about as good as the other.
Hire him. Oh, before I forget, Sally, when I had gotten to Fontana, I had a late breakfast with Lewis Longmont. His chef fed me crap Susie's.
Fed you what?
The chef set it on fire before he served me. Thought he'd lost his mind.
You didn't eat it, did you?
Oh, yeah. It was pretty good. Real sweet.
Crepe Suzette.
That's it. Say it again.
You pronounce it Crepe Suzette. It's French.
Them French sound mighty notional, if you ask me.
What are those damn nesters up to, Clint?
I can't figure it. They've all rode out and told the miners there wouldn't be no trouble as long as the miners don't spook their herds or trample their crops. They was firm, but in a nice way.
Damn! I thought Jensen would just go in shooting.
So did I. You want us to maybe do a little night riding?
No, hell no. I want this to all be the nesters doing. Wait a minute. Yeah, I do want some night riding. Send some boys out to Peyton's place. Rustle a couple of head and leave the butchered carcasses close to some miners' camps.
Peyton's hot-headed. He'll go busting up in there and shoot or hang some of them while we stand clear.
Tonight?
Tonight.
Sheriff Monty Carson and his so-called deputies kept only a loose hand on the rowdy doings in Fontana. They broke up fist fights whenever they could get to them in time, but they rarely interfered in a stand-up face-to-face shootout. Mostly, they saw to it that all the businesses, with the exception of Lewis Longmont, Ed Jackson, and Lawyer Hunt Brook, paid into the Tilden kitty, 10% of the gross, and didn't hold none back. The deputies didn't bother Doc Colton Spaulding either. They'd wisely decided that some of them just might need the Doc's services sooner or later. Probably sooner. And to make matters just a little worse, the town was attracting a small group of would-be gun slicks. Young men who fancied themselves gunfighters and looked to make a reputation in Fontana. They strutted about with their pearl-handled Colts tied down low and their huge California spurs jangling. The young men usually dressed in all black or in loudly colored silk shirts with pinstripe trousers tucked inside their polished boots. They bragged a lot about who they had faced down or shot and did a lot of practicing outside the town limits. They were flat out looking for trouble, and trouble was waiting just around the corner for a lot of them. The town of Fontana was still growing, both in business and population. It could now boast four hotels and half a dozen rooming houses. Cafes had sprung up almost as fast as the saloons, and as fast as the hurdy-gurdy girls who made their dubious living in those saloons and in the dirty cribs in the back rooms. The mother lode of the vein had been located, and stages were rolling into town twice a day to carry the gold from the assay offices and drop off their load of passengers. Tilden Franklin had built a bank, the Bank of Fontana, and was doing a swift business. Supply wagons rolled and rattled and rumbled 24 hours a day, bringing in much-needed items to the various businesses. To give the man a small amount of credit, Tilden Franklin had taken a hard look at his town and quietly but firmly begun rearranging the business district. There were now boundaries beyond which certain types could not venture during specific hours. The red light district lay at one end of Fontana, just behind a long row of saloons and greasy spoon cafes. Those ladies who worked in the red light houses were not allowed past the invisible line separating the good people from the less desirable people during the time between 7 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. Heaven forbid that a decent woman should have to rub shoulders with a, well, that other kind of lady.
Here they are! Look what they gone and done!
Peyton and Smoke stood over the butchered carcasses of two of Peyton's beeves. They were close to a miner's camp.
Take it easy. Those miners hit a solid strike over there. No reason for them to have rustled your cows. Think about it, Peyton, and look here.
What? It's a bunch of horse tracks, so? What the hell's that got to do with it?
Those miners are riding mules, Peyton.
That news brought the farmer rancher up short and silent. He walked over and sat down on a fallen log.
We're not acting like Tilden would like, so he's trying to prod us into doing something to blow the lid off. I was about to play right into his game. He would have sent those so-called deputies to arrest me, wouldn't he, Smoke?
Probably.
Smoke had told none of the others about the old gunfighters on their way in. Charlie had returned from his travels by now, all smiles and good news. The agent gunfighters would begin arriving at any time, trickling in alone or in pairs as they linked up on the trails and roads.
Go on home. I'll go see the miners.
You're a good man, Smoke. I'd hate to see you lying somewhere all full of holes because you tried keeping the peace.
Don't you worry about me, Peyton. Just keep your head on straight and we'll get through this.
Smoke rode up toward the miners' camp.
Hello there.
Oh, don't tell us we gotta get going here. We just got ourselves a vein.
No, you boys just keep doing your work. But I gotta tell you all something. This here's Peyton's land, and two beeves about a mile south of here were just found dead, slaughtered.
Hey, now we don't know nothing
about... Easy, I know it wasn't you guys. I know it's just somebody who'd want to see trouble hit this part of the country.
Well, who'd try to cause trouble, Smoke?
I don't know, but I just put the lid back on what might have been real trouble. You boys be careful here on in.
Tempers are frayed enough around here. The slightest thing could light the fuse.
We will. Say, you reckon Peyton and some of the others would mind if me and the boys pitched in and kind of helped around their places? You know, we're all pretty handy with tools. Maybe some repair work, such as that.
I think it would be a hell of a nice move on your part. And it's going to irritate whoever it is who's trying to stir up trouble. I'll tell the others to look for you. I bet y'all'd like some home-cooked grub, too, huh? Wouldn't you?
I'm telling you, that'd right hit the spot.
Well, I'll sure see what I can do for you.
Yeah.
Smoke the Gunfighter had suddenly become Smoke the Peacemaker.
Well?
Nothing. Smoke made peace with the miners. He figured it all out somehow.
What's it gonna take to prod those goddamn nesters into action? I mean, I'm about out of ideas.
Now, Clint didn't like what he was about to suggest, but Clint did ride for the brand, right or wrong.
The Colby girl?
Yeah, well, that's risky, Clint. You have a plan?
Yeah.
How long will it take you to set it up?
Just a few days. Them nesters gotta be going into town for supplies pretty soon.
All right, fine. Do it.
Smoke and Pearlie stepped out of the barn just as Charlie was riding up from the Sugarloaf Range. Smoke had never seen a more disreputable, down-at-the-heels-looking bunch in all his life. Some of them looked like they'd be lucky to see another dawn.
Maybe we better find us a platform quick, boss. Them old boys is gonna hurt themselves getting down off their horses.
Smoke had to smile. He was fondly recalling a bunch of mountain men who at 80 were as spry as many men half their age.
Don't sell them short, Pearlie. I got a hunch they're gonna fool us all.
You trying to have fun without me, Charlie Star?
Hell no! Hey there, Buttermilk!
You get uglier every time I see you, Charlie!
That one talks funny, Smoke.
Mm-hmm. I see now why he's called Buttermilk.
Why?
That's probably all he can eat. He don't have any teeth.
All right, everybody, this is it. Make yourselves at home.
Sure will.
Sally joined Smoke and Pearlie.
Oh, my word. Smoke, is that one the Apache Kid? He looks like he might topple over at any moment.
That's him, all right. Preacher told me about him. And I'll make you a bet right now that that old man can walk all day and all night, stop for a handful of berries and take a sip of water and go another 24 hours.
Well, I ain't disputing your words, boss, but I'm gonna have to see it to believe it.
Smiling, Smoke bent down and picked up a small chunk of wood.
Hey, Apache!
The old buckskin-clad man turned and looked at Smoke.
A silver dollar says you can't knock this hunk of wood out of the air.
Tosher, boy!
Holy cow! He shot it six times!
That's six silver dollars you owe me.
Deal's a deal. Apache Kid. I'll be right back with it. Come on, Sally. Let's go inside.
As Smoke and Sally went to the cabin, the Apache Kid turned to Charlie. The other old gunfighters listened in.
That Jensen? That's him. He's good as they say. Oh, I wouldn't want to brace him.
That good, eh?
He's the best, Luke.
Pearlie shyly wandered over to the growing knot of men. He was expecting the needle to get put to him, and he got just that. A huge, grizzled old man dismounted and looked him in the eyes.
You mama know you slipped away from the house, boy, huh?
You be Pistol LaRue?
I wore when I left camp this morning.
Run across the Pally Yearn about 3 years ago, up on the Utah-Wyoming line, south of Fort Supply. Called himself Pawnee.
Goddamn, do tell. How war old Pawnee?
Not too good. He died. Buried him at the base of King's Mountain, north side. Thought you want to know.
I do, and I appreciate you planting him. You say a word or two over him, did you?
Some.
This is Pearlie, Pistol.
I'm mighty damn pleased.
Now, this ain't gonna be no Sunday social, boys. And I come right up front and tell you that some of you is likely to be planted in these here mountains. Oh, looks like we weren't all here yet.
Charlie waited until the last of the old gunslicks had dismounted and shook and howdied. Charlie counted heads. 20 of the hardest, most talked about, and most legendary men of the West stood in the front yard of the sturdy little cabin. Only God and God alone knew how many men these randy old boys had put down into that eternal rest. The Apache Kid was every bit of 70, but he could still draw and shoot with the best. Buttermilk, well, Buttermilk didn't have a tooth in his head. Those Colts belted around his lean waist could bite and snarl and roar. Jay Church was a youngster. He was about Charlie's age, but he was a feared gun hawk. Dad Weaver was in his mid-60s. He opened him a little cafe when he hung up his guns, but the rowdies and the punks hadn't left him alone. They'd come looking, and he'd given the undertaker more business. He finally said to hell with it, taking off for the mountains. Silver Jim still looked the dandy. He wore one of them long white coats that road agents had taken to wearing. His boots was old and patched, but they shined, and his dark short coat was kind of frayed at the cuffs, but it was clean. His Colts were oiled and deadly. Then there was old Hard Rock, and what could be said about Hard Rock? The man had cleaned up more wild towns than any other two combined. Now he was aging and broke, but he was still ready to ride the high trails of the mountain man. Charlie lifted his eyes and spotted Moody, who was standing away from the others, living up to his name. Never had much to say, but by the Lord, he was as rough and randy as they could come. And then there was Lynch, big and hoary and bearded. Never packed but one shotgun. Said he never needed but one. Luke Nations, a legend. Sheriff, marshal, outlaw, gunfighter. Had books wrote about him. And as far as Charlie knew, he never got a dime out of any of them. Pistol LaRue, Creole from down in Louisiana. As fast with a knife as with a gun, and that was plenty fast. Quiet Bill Foley, wore his guns cross-draw and had a border roll that was some quick. Sunset Hatfield, supposed to be from either Kentucky or Tennessee, a crack shot with rifle or pistol. Crooked John Simmons, he got that name hung on him because he was as cross-eyed as anybody had ever seen. He had a hair-trigger temper and a set of hair-trigger Colts. Bull Flagler, strong as a bull and just as dangerous. Carried him a sawed-off shotgun with a pistol grip on his left side, a Colt on the other. Toot Tuner, loved trains. Loved them so much he just couldn't resist holding them up back some years. Finally turned lawman and made a damn good one. Fast draw and a dead shot. Red Shingletown, still had him a mighty fine mess of flaming red hair. He'd been a soldier, a sailor, an adventurer, a rancher, and a gunfighter. And last but not least, Sutler Cordova. His mother was French, and his dad was Spanish. Killed a man when he was about 10 or 11 years old. Man was with a bunch that killed his ma and pa. Sutler got his pa's guns, mounted up, and tracked him from Chihuahua to Montana Territory. Took him 6 years, but he killed every one of them. Sutter was not a man you wanted to get crossways of.
Look out that window, Sally. There they are. We're looking at yet another last of a breed.
They're something special, Smoke.
I wonder did I do right in asking them to come.
Sally touched Smoke's arm. He looked down at her.
You did the right thing. The trail that lies before those men out there is the one they choose. And if it's their last trail to ride, that's the way they would want it. And even though they're doing this for you and for Charlie, you know the main reason they're doing it, don't you?
Smoke grinned, and it wiped years from his face. He looked about 10 years old, all except for his eyes.
Oh, preacher.
That's right, honey. They all knew him, and they knew he helped raise you.
What do you plan on having for supper?
I hadn't thought. Why?
How about making some bear sign?
It's gonna run me out of flour.
Well, I think me and Charlie and some of those old boys out there just might ride into Fontana tomorrow. We'll stop by Colby's and get him to take his wagon. Stock up enough for everybody. Besides, I want to see Lewis's face when we all come riding in.
Uh-huh. But mostly you want to see Tilden Franklin's face.
Well...
Smoke suddenly swept Sally up in his arms and began carrying her toward the bedroom.
Smoke, no! Not with all those... men out...
Smoke placed her gently on the bed.
Oh, poo. Who cares about those men out there anyway?
Adam Colby had been reading a dime novel about the life and times of Luke Nation, with a drawing of him on the cover. He looked up at the sound of horses' hooves drumming on the road. The boy thought he'd been flung directly into the pages of the dime novel. He looked at the man on the horse, then he looked at the cover of the book.
Whoa! Pa? Pa! Pa, get out here, Pa!
Boy, what in tarnation is wrong with you?
The man looked at the group of riders sitting their horses in his front yard. Colby's eyes flitted from man to man, taking in the lined and tanned faces, the hard, calloused hands, and the guns belted around the lean waists. Colby knew most of the men. He just never imagined he'd see him in his front yard. Adam approached Luke, the dime novel still in his hand. He stood looking up at the famed gunfighter, awe in his eyes. He held out the book.
Would you sign my book, Mr. Nations?
Might be honored, boy. You got a pencil?
It's here somewhere. Here you are, Mr. Nations.
Oh, thank you. That's about all I can write in my name. Luke Nations. There you go.
Thank you, sir!
You're welcome.
Hello, everybody. How can I help you, Smoke?
We're riding into Fontana, Colby. Sally needs some supplies. Want to get your wagon and come with us?
Good idea. Wilbur and the boys will stay here. Give me a minute to get my shirt on. Adam, go hook up the team, son.
Soon, Colby's wife, Belle, daughter, Velvet, and boys, Adam and Bob, stood with Wilbur and his wife, Edna, and watched the men pull out. They would stop at several other small spreads to take any orders for supplies. The men and women and the kids left at Colby's place resumed their morning chores. And a mile away, hidden in the timber, a TF rider watched it all through field glasses. When the men had ridden out of sight, the TF rider took a mirror from his saddlebags and caught the morning sun, signaling to another TF rider that everything was ready.
I got no idea who them hard-looking old boys is with Jensen. They don't look like they'd be much trouble to handle. Most of them look to be older than God.
Tilden Franklin wanted to make damn sure he was highly visible to as many people as possible until after Clint's plan was over. Tilden had taken to riding into Fontana every morning, early, with Clint and several of his hard cases for bodyguards. He and his foreman usually had breakfast at the best hotel in town and then took their after-meal cigars while sitting on the porch of the hotel, perhaps reading or talking or just watching the passing parade. This morning, Tilden looked up from the new edition of the Fontana Sunburst, Haywood and Dana Arden's paper, just as a TF rider trotted by. Without looking at either Tilden or Clint, the rider very minutely nodded his head as he passed. With a slight smile, Tilden lifted the newspaper.
Yeah, you know, Clint, I'm kind of sorry I'm going to miss out on the action with that built-up little girl of Colby's. Yes, sir. I bet that when she settles into the rhythm, Velvet will get to enjoying it.
Yeah,
all women are the same when it comes to that. They like to holler and raise sand, but they want it. They just like to pretend they don't for the look of things. Yeah, God, women are predictable creatures. And like the lower creatures, they're not very bright. Pretty to have around, nice to pet, but that's about it. Well, well, looks like the law's got something to report.
Sheriff Monty Carson looped the reins of his horse over the hitch rail in front of the hotel. What's going on, Sheriff?
Charlie Starr riding in with that Smoke Jensen and the Nestor Colby, Mr. Tilden.
Tilden felt his face stiffen and grow hot as the blood raced to flush his cheeks.
Charlie Starr?
Yes, sir. And that ain't all. Smoke's got some mean old gunslicks with him, too. The Apache Kid, Sunset Hatfield, Bill Foley, Silver Jim, Moody, and Luke Nations. They riding like they got a purpose, if you know what I mean.
A young, two-bit, half-assed punk who thought himself to be a bad man was hanging around the open doors of the hotel. He smiled and felt his heart race at the news. The deputy had just mentioned half a dozen of the most famous gunslingers in all the West, and they were coming into town, here. The punk, who was calling himself the Silver Dollar Kid, smiled and walked through the lobby, slipping out the back way. He wanted to change clothes, put on his best outfit before he faced one of those old gun hawks. And there was a picture taker in town. Might be a good idea to stop by his studio and tell him about the old gun slick so he could have all of his equipment set up and ready to pop. The punk began running, excited about getting back to his tent and changing into his very finest outfit. The news of the approaching gunfighters, still several miles out of Fontana, swept through the town like wildfire through a dry forest. Haywood heard it and walked rapidly toward the main business district. He found himself a spot on the boardwalk across the street from where Tilden Franklin sat, surrounded by his hard cases. Shopkeepers shooed their customers outside, where they stood, lining the boardwalks and packed dirt sidewalks, waiting for the event of the day. Louis Longmont came out of his gambling tent to watch as he smoked his first cigar of the morning.
So you actually pulled it off, Smoke. You've actually pulled in some of the randiest old boys still living in the West. Gonna be interesting. Very, very interesting.
Smoke halted his small group on the edge of town.
Charlie, looks like word is out. And there's likely a whole passel of two-bit punks who'll be looking for a reputation in town. They'll be on the prod for a fight.
Well, they'll damn sure get more than they bargained for with this bunch.
We'll ride straight through, stopping at Jackson's Mercantile. Colby, pull your wagon up to the loading dock by the side. If there's going to be trouble, let the other side start it. Let's go, boys.
Smoke and Charlie took the point, with Apache and Sunset riding to the left of the wagon, Bill Foley and Silver Jim to the right, and Moody and Luke Nations taking the drag. Smoke rode slowly, so the wheels of the wagon would not kick up much dust. The town had virtually come to a halt, the streets lined with citizens. They stood silently, watching the riders make their way along the street. Trouble hung in the air, as thick as dust. The riders could practically feel the hate from Tilden Franklin's eyes borne into him as they rode past where he sat like a king on the hotel boardwalk. Smoke met the man's eyes and touched his hat brim in a gesture of greeting. Tilden did not return the greeting. They passed Louis Longmont's gaming tent. Most of the old gunfighters knew the gambler, and they greeted him. Lewis returned the greeting and very minutely nodded his head in the direction Smoke was riding. There was something or someone down there that Lewis wanted Smoke to know about. Smoke's eyes searched both sides of the street. Then he saw them, the three of them, lounging in front of a newly erected tent saloon. Luis Chamba, Kane, and Sanderson. The Mexican gunfighter stood with his arms folded across his chest, his sombrero off his head, hanging down his back by a chin cord.
See him?
I see him. That Chamba, he's a bad one. Kills for pleasure, gets his kicks that way, you know?
I know the type. What about Kane and Sanderson?
Just as bad. They all three twisted, and they'll kill anything or anybody for money.
Look at those punks over to the left.
Seen them too. Looking to make themselves a reputation. I hope they don't try none of this bunch. These guys are all on the shady side of their years, but Lord God, don't sell them short.
A young man with a smart-ass look to him and dressed like a San Francisco pimp stood glaring at the men. At least Smoke figured that's how a San Francisco pimp might dress. He'd never seen one.
Reckon it's time for us to start us a boot hill here in Fontana, boys. Them old boys ain't got long to go no ways.
The Apache Kid favored the so-called Silver Dollar Kid with a glance and dismissed him just as quickly. The rest of the aging gunfighters didn't even acknowledge the punk had spoken.
Oh, hell, they're so goddamn old they done lost their balls, boys.
That one is mine.
Luke means it, Smoke. Don't meddle none.
Oh, hell, far be it from me to interfere.
Ma?
Yes, dear?
I finished my chores for the morning. I figure it'd be nice to take a walk through the woods.
Well, all right, Velvet, but stay close.
Yes, ma'am, I will.
Adam Colby watched his sister Velvet set out. He stuck his newly autographed dime novel in his back pocket and picked up his .22 rifle, following Velvet, but staying back, knowing how his sister enjoyed being alone. While Ed Jackson and his brother loaded the wagon with supplies, Colby walked with Smoke over to Lewis Longmont's place.
Smoke, you figure Charlie and the others would be all right?
Well, they've gotten by without my advice for a combination of about 350 years so far. I doubt they need it now.
Hello, Smoke. I noticed you brought a little flavor to Fontana.
If that's what you want to call it, Lewis. This is Colby. Colby's been working real hard making sure his home doesn't get burnt down by TF boys.
That is an honorable profession, if I do say so. Glenlivet, gentlemen?
Eh?
Fine scotch whiskey.
Oh, well, sure.
Here's to a very interesting summer, gentlemen. Shall we adjourn to what laughingly passes for a veranda and watch the show, boys?
Sure gonna be one.
Luke Nations had broken off from the others and was walking toward the knot of would-be gun slicks, walking directly toward the dude-it-up punk with the fat mouth. Luke stopped about 25 feet from him. He stood with the leather thongs off the hammers of his Colt. He stood with his feet slightly spread. He was big and bent and old and mean-looking, and the look in his eyes would have warned off a puma.
You made a comment a short time ago, kid, about balls. Well, now's your chance to back it up with your mouth. Either that, or tuck your fancy tail between your legs and carry your ass.
The kid's name was Lester, but he called himself Sundance. But right now, he felt more like Lester than Sundance. The Silver Dollar Kid had backed up against the wall. Unlike Lester, he wasn't afraid. He just wanted to see if the old man still had it in him. When he had studied him, then he would make his move.
God damn you, boy, do you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Monte Carson stood to the side, his deputies flanking him. None of them were so stupid as to break this thing up. They knew who was around. Old Moody was just across the street, standing alone, both hands to his sides, the palms very close to the butts of his Colts. The deputy cut his eyes. Old Sunset was standing behind him, about 30 feet away. Bill Foley stood just to their right, poised and ready for anything that might come his way.
Shit.
Monte Carson was looking eyeball to eyeball with Silver Jim, his long white duster brushed back, exposing the butts of the Colts, the leather hammer thongs off. Back of them, facing Tilden Franklin and Clint, stood the Apache Kid.
Hello, Smoke. You boys come to watch or get dealt in?
Tilden chewed his cigar soggy in a matter of a heartbeat. He felt no fear, for there was no fear in him. But he had grown up hearing stories about these old gunfighters. And at this distance, everybody was going to get lead in them. And there was something else, too. Tilden knew from hard experience that when dealing with ballsy old men, you'd best walk lightly. With their best years behind them, they had nothing to lose. Old men did not fight fair. Tilden had learned that the hard way. Clint cut his eyes. Lewis Longmont, his tailor jacket brushed back over the butt of his guns, stood to Clint's right. Smoke was facing Tilden's other hands, and the other hands were looking a little green around the mouth. And the gunslinger Johnny North had finally made his appearance. The blonde-haired Nevada gun hand stood in the street, facing Luis Chamba and his two sidekicks. Johnny was smiling, and those that knew Johnny was not the smiling type. As the Fontana Sunburst would later say in a column by its editor, all in all, it was a most exhilarating and tense moment. These legends of the Wild West captivating an entire town with their bigger-than-life presence. A moment from the fading past that would be forever etched in the minds of all who had the opportunity to witness this fortuitous encounter of the last of the bad men. Haywood did on occasion get a bit carried away with his writing. But since the written word was scarce in the West, folks would read and enjoy near about anything. They might not understand what the hell they were reading, but by God, they'd read it.
Well, do it, punk.
Luke began walking toward the dandy. Luke had felt all along the dandy didn't have the cold nerve to pull iron. Soon he reached the young man who was beginning to sweat. Lester fell hard. He lay on the dirt, looking up at Luke through wide, scared eyes. Luke reached down and plucked the pearl-handled Colt from the young man's holsters. He stepped to one side, wedged both barrels between a support block and the boardwalk, and gave both Colts a swift jerk. He tossed both ruined pistols to Lester.
I'll tell you something, boy. I wish somebody had done something like that to me when I was your age. I might have amounted to something.
Luke Nations turned his back to the humiliated young man and walked away.
I'll kill him for that. You just wait and see. I'll kill him for that.
The Silver Dollar Kid walked across the street in the direction Luke had taken.
Well, boys, how about the drinks on me? What say you all?
Smoke looked at Tilden Franklin.
That includes you too, Franklin. Join us.
Tilden Franklin's face flushed with rage and hate. Tilden turned his back on the invitation and stomped back up the street, Clint following like a dog behind him. The TF puppies followed Clint.
A man is obviously of low degree.
Tilden had heard the remark, and his back stiffened with new anger. His rage was such that he could hardly see now.
Get the horses, Clint.
Boss, hadn't we best stay in town?
Tilden's big hands gripped a hitch rail, and he trembled in his hot fury.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Order your boys to take off the gun belts, Clint.
What?
You heard me, Clint. We're going to take that invitation for a drink. Then I'm going to stomp Smoke Jensen's goddamn guts out.